Welcome to the Gospel Coalition interview series. I'm your host, Colin Hansen, editorial director of TGC. The Kansas City Royals lost an entire generation of fans of their Major League Baseball team. Nearly relentless losing during the 1990s and 2000s eroded generations of goodwill built up during several playoff appearances in the 1970s, an American League championship in 1980, and finally a World Series victory in 1985. With family in Wichita, Kansas, Dayton Moore grew up a Royals fan. As a college freshman, he watched that World Series from just beyond the outfield wall on the shoulder of Interstate 70. During his college years, Moore also recommitted his life to following Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. Now the general manager of the Royals, Moore brings his faith to work as guidance in how to respond to critics, how to treat employees, and how to make decisions. Last year, as Kansas City Royals made the postseason for the first time in 29 years and swept their way to an American League Championship Series victory before succumbing to the San Francisco Giants by one run in Game 7 of the World Series. He shares his testimony and lessons on Christian leadership in his new book, More Than a Season, Building a Championship Culture, written with Matt Foulkes. All proceeds from the book benefit the foundation Moore started, See You in the Major Leagues, which supports youth baseball, education, families in crisis, and faith-based programs. Moore joins me today to talk about failure, perseverance, character, ego, and the wisdom of Jesus Christ. Thank you for joining me, Dayton.
Thank you, Colin. Great to be with you.
You quote your dad in the book telling you about a particularly difficult coach. Your whole life, you'll have someone telling you that you stink. And then you say that success in baseball means handling failure. The best hitters, as we often hear, fail two-thirds of the time. But I think a lot of what you say there, a lot of the same things could be said about church leadership. The failures, personal and with others, often stand out. So how do you keep getting out of bed each day knowing your best work will often result in failure?
Well, I mean, I love to compete, for one. And, that's the greatest lessons I've learned in athletics is if you want to be successful, you got to compete. And, of course, if you're going to be successful in life, you have to compete. I know my wife, Mary Ann, I had to compete for her. And I've got to compete for the love and the admiration and the respect of my children and my family each and every day. So it's a big part of what you do. And, of course, baseball, to be successful, it demands that you manage failure, just like life. I mean, there's very few days I put my head on the pillow at night and I say to myself, this was a perfect day and everything, went as I expected. There's oftentimes many challenges and many twists and turns, and it's easy to give up and quit. And but if you love to compete and you have the ability, the desire to compete, and also being able to persevere is crucial. And without my faith, without my passion for Jesus, trying to be an example for Him, I'm not sure I'd be able to do any of the things that I mentioned. I'm not sure I'd do them well, as I said here today, but I try hard, and it's been a fun journey.
Your book frequently cites the role of character in scouting and acquisitions, which is what you're responsible for as general manager, and you as overseeing all of that. But I'm wondering, isn't every team looking for high-character guys who fit their organization? What makes it different for the Royals?
Well, of course. I mean, what we set out to do from day one is, we knew this was going to be an unbelievable challenge. The Royals hadn't been in the playoffs since 1985. The economics of the game had drastically changed. It was much harder to build a farm system in a quick fashion, especially in the immediate gratification society we live in. Of course, an organization without the ability to go out and sign a lot of high-priced free agents to turn around quickly. So we had to commit internally, and we wanted to create an organization that we'd want our own family and sons to be a part of. That was our mission statement. Let's create an organization that we'd want our own families to be a part of. So the scouts that we hire, would we want this scout around our dinner table each and every night talking to us about being a part of the Kansas City Royals? The coaches, the instructors, the managers that we hire, would we want them teaching and guiding our own children? So we're very intentional about finding men and people of character, because to develop character, And to identify character and makeup, I believe you have to be able to have character and makeup yourself as a leadership team. So we got to lead by example, and we take a lot of pride in making sure we get the right people that can lead, because the leaders, they're the ones shaping your culture.
So let's talk about some of the challenges that you faced coming into this job. You didn't want the Kansas City job at first, and you had a lot of people telling you not to take it. And when you actually took the job, you actually then were convinced later that you made the wrong decision, because you realized that if you'd actually known the organization in depth from the inside when you were considering the job, you wouldn't have accepted the position. Late in the book, you come back around to this, to times when things got especially difficult, the criticism mounted. And I remember you confessing to feeling proud amid criticism as you thought, nobody wanted this job. You wanted to yell out, you're lucky to have me. But I want to go back to that question about how we make big life-changing decisions like that. And short of expecting the clouds to part and God's voice to boom down on us, how do we discern the Lord's leading in those decisions? And then afterward, how do we avoid the crippling second-guessing that can paralyze us?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And, you know, I look at, our thought process in taking this position. And, I was intrigued by this opportunity because it was my boyhood team. I knew it was going to be an unbelievable challenge. As I said before, I love to compete and try to do something special. And but we wanted to come here and make something better. But in analyzing this opportunity, it's you don't have a lot of time to dot all the I's and cross all the T's, so to speak, because obviously the Kansas City Royals were looking for a general manager. And, I look back on that, and if I felt, I kind of had one foot in and one foot out at the time as I was pursuing this and analyzing this. And if I knew, if I could look into a crystal ball and knew that how challenging it was going to be, and all the criticism that we would take along the way and how that criticism would potentially affect your family environment, that dynamic. Certainly Kansas City is a tight, close-knit community. You can't disappear and blend in here. People love this team. They follow this team. And so it was very difficult and was very challenging. And I think looking back on it, I think God kind of shielded me, knowing who I am and what I'm about. And perhaps being in Atlanta, we've won for 14 straight years and been a part of championships. And John Schuerholz and all the great people over there did a tremendous job in building that. So there was a safe haven. It was comfortable, very comfortable staying in Atlanta. Our family was thriving. We had a good church family. We loved the environment. I loved the people I worked with. And again, I think if we would have known all the challenges it was going to take here, we probably would have just stayed right there in Atlanta, because it was a tough decision to part from there.
So why didn't you turn back when the challenges became apparent to you?
Well, we were all in at the time. I mean, I felt like we were doing some good things, and we had a good group of people we were working with every single day, and our employees, our directors, our leaders, our scouts. I knew that they were growing. They were improving as professionals, and so regardless of what the outcome might be, our people were getting better. And so I took certainly an appreciation of that, and viewed that as an accomplishment going forward. Because as a general manager, the two things that I want to make sure that we do very, very well, first and foremost, create a great environment where people love to work and want to be a part of. And also, challenge people in a way that it perhaps advances their career, where they can impact other people and other organizations.
Yeah, I'm talking with Dayton Moore, general manager of the Kansas City Royals and author of the new book, More Than a Season, Building a Championship Culture. Was really interested in what you said about debate and confrontation among the people you hire and your staff. You write about the Royals. We want people who won't shy away from confrontation. Good organizations have the ability to debate and argue. this is what keeps relationships healthy. Conflict, when it's not personal and the end goal is for the right decision, is a good thing and will lead to productivity. Good organizations and healthy families are built and thrive on the ability to debate. I was fascinated by that, and I'm wondering, do you think, based on your experience, the same thing applies to churches? Because, at least from what I've seen, maybe you've seen the same thing. Conflict in churches tends to simmer behind the scenes until it explodes in public, at which point it's often too late for reconciliation, and the argument has already become deeply personal, as spiritual issues tend to be. So do you think this leadership council is applicable in other realms, including the church?
No doubt. I think we're all looking for the same thing. You want harmony within your organization, within your family, within your community. And I believe the only way to achieve that is an environment where people's opinions are tested. Everybody believes that they have the opportunity to speak their mind. Of course, you expect things to be professional. You don't want things to get personal. Sometimes they do. There's nothing more discouraging or hurtful or just demoralizing. And if you're a part of an environment, a part of a meeting, and nobody wants to hear your opinion, or you leave that meeting and you go back to your hotel room or you go back to your home at night, and you realize you couldn't say anything, or you should have said anything, said something, and added to the debate, and you didn't do it. Well, that erodes the organization. And oftentimes what happens in that case, if your employees, your staff members don't feel like that they can express their opinion to you and to your leadership team, they're going to express it somewhere else. Right. I mean, they're going to express it within their community. The criticism perhaps is going to go right and left instead of, you know, upward, where someone can do something about it. And then you create disharmony and dysfunction in your organization. So if you have a group of people that truly have the best interests of the organization at heart, and they care, and they want everybody else to succeed above and beyond themselves as individuals, and you're only concerned about getting it right, you got a chance to be successful. But once you have those individuals that are more concerned about self, it becomes a problem. And that's where your leaders have to be able to decide, when it's time to cut the cord and move on with certain individuals. But you want those opinions expressed, and I believe that's the way you have organizational harmony.
Yeah, let's talk right about that issue of having the right people in place. You write of leadership, I've learned that if you want people to work for you and enjoy it, you need to give them some slack every once in a while. Your old boss and mentor, John Sherholtz, the Atlanta Braves, commends delegation as the best way to ensure success in leadership, but with this big caveat: so long as you've selected the right people and given clear instructions. So what do you do as a leader when you don't have the right people in place to delegate?
Well, I mean, that's, you've got to find the right people to put them in the right slots, or it's going to be a tremendous a lot of difficulties. And that's why, as the general manager, we do everything that we can, as I said, to try to create a great place where people want to work. And we give people freedom to make decisions. And, I know what I don't know. And I try to bring people on board that can make decisions. I want to be informed. But I hired certain people to do a job, and if I didn't need them to do that job, I wouldn't have hired them. So you expect them to be creative and make decisions on the best interest of the Kansas City Royals, and knowing full well they're going to make mistakes, and but you got to be able to support them and encourage them, and so they don't get passive with their decision making, because that's the worst thing that can happen in our game. You're going to make a lot of mistakes, and I've found that if you're not making mistakes, you're probably not aggressive enough when it comes to recommending players and signing players and trying to develop and teach players. So you want them to stay aggressive and stay convicted with their processes, even though they're going to make mistakes.
Now, the Royals didn't make the postseason in 2013 and extended a 28-year postseason drought. Some media and fans thought you should be released yourself after the next year, 2014, if the team didn't make the playoffs, especially since a number of the moves you'd made for personnel had targeted that particular year, especially as a breakthrough. But interestingly, in the book, you write about how you skipped the general manager meetings in the offseason and instead took your family to the Holy Land for 2 weeks. Were you ever worried that you made the wrong decision if it could potentially cost you your job?
No, you know, it's I've never really concerned myself with that. My team's always been at home. I love baseball. I can't recall a day in my life that I haven't thought about this game and dreamt about this game. So, and sometimes I have to admit it's became my guy. It has controlled me, and I'm fortunate through my faith and through you know, my loving, caring, encouraging wife, Mary Ann, that you know, she'll remind me of the importance of you know, staying focused on my team at home. But you know, our kids are growing up, and you know, life moves very quickly, and I've never, you know, second-guessed myself or anybody else I've worked with and lead for them making their family their priority. Because you have to make good choices at home. You have to make good choices off, you know, outside the workplace, off the field, if you're going to let your natural ability and your expertise as a professional perform consistently. So you've got to have that balance, and we, you know, we've always tried to do that.
What is the interesting contrast to draw here? What is the relationship between or between ego and forgiveness? You talk a lot in the book about different lessons you've learned, even leadership lessons from the life of Jesus. But why do leaders need to forgive every day?
Well, I've learned that really over the last 4 or 5 years here as much as anything. And, you know, every day you know, in this position, you know, somebody is perhaps criticizing a move you make, whether it be in signing the player, drafting the player, trading the player, hiring a certain person. You know, the media oftentimes can be, you know, very critical. The fans can be very boisterous about their opinions, and even the people that you work most closely with are going to, you know, second guess at times. And but you got to be able to forgive. And if you can't, this game will eat you up. And you know, oftentimes when I feel like I'm getting burnt out, or I feel like you know, I'm not sure I want to do this the rest of my life, when I trace it back and ask the question why, it often goes back to that forgiveness piece. There's something in my life that's making me angry, that's creating bitterness that I need to address and give away and let go. And you've got to be able to do that. And without my faith, I'm not sure I'd be able to forgive on a daily basis. And of course, you know, that's what you know, our Savior Jesus Christ did for us. And you know, I'm a sinner saved by grace, and I'm not I'm certainly you know, trying to renew my life each and every day and lead in a way that brings hope to others.
I have just a few more questions here with Dayton Moore of the Kansas City Royals about his book, More Than a Season, Building a Championship Culture. Another one of these leadership lessons, interestingly, that you built into the organizational culture based on what you had studied about the life of Jesus, is to handle the most important communication one-on-one rather than through text and emails. Why?
I think you've got to get your point across. I mean, you have to you know, take part in straight line communication. I mean, it's oftentimes, and there's no doubt, you have to stand up in front of a group of people or your organization and address, you know, broad topics and set the focus and the vision. But I've always found that if you really want to get your point across, you've got to be able to set one-on-one, look someone in the eye, and just make sure they can feel your heart and what you're trying to accomplish. And, you know, I think that's, you know, that's what Jesus did, you know, one-on-one to make his point. And, you know, with with his disciples or whoever it may be. And, I just think that that's how, I've learned from, so many of the mentors that I've had. They've made their points most impactful when it's been one-on-one, looking me in the eye and saying, Dayton, this is what we need you to do. This is how I need you to lead, and I'm counting on you to do this and to make sure a certain job is done well. And, I've tried to follow that advice.
I'm speaking here from the fan perspective, and I know that fans often want team leaders, team officials, to share their frustration during rough patches. But you and the men you've hired always look for something positive. You notice this when you're watching the broadcast, listening to the manager, hearing you interviewed, and you write, "The biggest mistake we make as leaders is to take out our frustration on the group. If it doesn't benefit the person or the situation, shut up." You cite, though, in the book in another section, an example where you didn't keep your mouth shut. It was following the disappointing loss to the Giants in the World Series with a runner on third base with two outs and down only one run. So how do you personally handle disappointment and frustration in a way that doesn't affect and drag down the whole group?
Well, that's a challenge for me. I mean, remaining calm in the eye of the storm is something that I work on daily. I'm very intense by nature. I'm passionate about what we do. I live and die on every single pitch. Once the game begins, I love talking the game. I love strategizing during the game. And as I said before, I love to compete, and you certainly want to win. So it's a challenge for me. And, that message, I'm talking to myself as much as anybody. But, what I found is I'm oftentimes, asking people I work with, look, I shouldn't have acted that way. I apologize or what have you. But, in baseball, we're together so much. I mean, we're together every single day. We know each other's families, and it truly is a very tight-knit group. But I've always felt that transparency is the very best way to lead. And I'm going to get exposed anyway in life. The people I work with understand that I have a faith walk. They also understand that I'm a sinner and that I make mistakes and I'm going to blow it. And when I do, I confess it to them and we move forward. And I've always felt that transparency is the absolute best way to operate.
Yeah, you write interestingly about an email that you sent at one point, a particularly frustrating moment a couple years ago, where you sent an email to a number of senior staff and simply said, "This is not going to happen anymore." What sort of a difference do you think that almost like line in the sand ended up making in your organization?
Well, I think we've always been committed to a lot of those principles and trying to find the right types of players that commit to winning and to winning championships and to being a great teammate and doing their part to create that unity and togetherness that's so necessary to be successful. But I think it's often you've got to continue to remind yourself of the type of players and the type of people that you're trying to acquire, the character that you want. It's something that you have to continue to discuss. And we're changing every single day as human beings. I mean, we're in process every day. And we're either, when you step on the baseball field, you're either practicing good habits or bad habits. And so the same thing applies to us in life. And I think that we have to continue to remind ourselves as a leadership team and as an individual of who am I trying to be, what are we trying to accomplish. And I find that if you don't recommit to those fundamentals, if you will, those key principles, monthly, quarterly or whatever it is, continue to emphasize and reemphasize, because it's a relentless focus and executing the fundamentals, not only on the field, but, within your leadership team of the character principles. You have to continue to stay focused on them if you're going to, sail the ship in the right direction.
And that's so hard to do because, for many different reasons, but among them, the criticism tends to be fairly relentless. The general manager, probably second only to the manager, because he's making moves every single day for a few hours with everybody watching in terms of the volume of criticism. I thought your reflections on criticism were particularly poignant in the book, and I'm wondering, how do you tell the difference between a critic raising a good point that can help you by exposing a blind spot, using that terminology used in the book, and a critic who just wants to tear you down and will always find a reason to complain no matter what, even when your team's in first place and with record crowds and everything like that?
Well, you've got to lead with humility and know that when you are, when people are looking at you with a critical eye, as I said in the book, it often can, uncover a potential blind spot, or you can have a very healthy debate with somebody who's looking at you with a critical eye, because there's very few things in this game that are black and white. I mean, you can, a lot of gray area, there's a lot of room for debate, and that debate and that conversation makes you better. And you should have those conversations. But there are those individuals that no matter what you do, no matter how you try to see their point of view, no matter how hard you try to articulate your point of view, are never going to be satisfied. And, they are simply trying to, tear you down or your organization down. Look, we won in Atlanta. I was there for almost 13 years, and we won every single year. And although it was a place where the morale was always very high, there was always a group of people trying to either undermine leadership or hurt the morale of the organization, no matter how well it was going. So, I understand that those times, those are going to exist. And oftentimes when someone is looking at you with a very critical spirit, it's not you. There's probably something in their life, some mystery, something that's bothering them, something in their marinade, how they were raised, that forcing them to be a certain way. I mean, so you just forgive it. Again, you forgive it and you move on. But, back to the forgiveness piece, something I left out is, probably the most important person you have to forgive in leadership is yourself, because, as I said, you're going to make a lot of mistakes, and it's okay, but you got to be able to forgive yourself as well if you're going to move on and continue to make strong decisions.
Now, beating yourself up continually just isn't going to be productive. It's not going to be helpful. Last question here. You write that kindness and love always win in response to criticism. I'm wondering, when have you seen that to be true in your work?
Well, one of the things when we began to win here in 2013, and we started getting multiple All Stars, and of course in 2014 when we won and won the American League Championship, went to the World Series, and of course with all the All Stars that we have now, six All Stars, and as we sit here today, I mean the team's doing very well. We still have a long way to go. And a lot of baseball left to play. But oftentimes people in the media, people in my colleagues, people in other organizations would say, don't you just feel like telling everybody just to go shove it? And, I've learned that, just being kind, not lashing out. Again, the forgiveness piece has... Perhaps given us more credibility going forward. Oftentimes, our biggest critics, in fact, our biggest critics through this process, through this journey, because that we treated them with just kindness and respect, and understood that we're not perfect, and tried to lead and answer questions in a very humble way. They have learned to respect us even more, and we couldn't have been more different. In a lot of ways, the way we were brought up in this game, I'm speaking to, obviously, the critic of us and who we are and how we built this team. But, when you're kind and respectful, people will honor that.
Dayton Moore, general manager of the Kansas City Royals, author of More Than a Season, Building a Championship Culture. Proceeds benefiting his foundation, See You in the Major Leagues, supporting youth baseball, education, families in crisis, faith-based programs. If you follow the link here at the Gospel Coalition, you can even get a personalized copy from Dayton Moore. Dayton, thank you very much for joining me today, and I hope people go out there and pick up this book. It's full of lots of great wisdom.
Colin, thanks a lot for having me, and I just appreciate just speaking with you.
For more resources from the Gospel Coalition, visit our website at www.thegospelcoalition.org.